ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Final preparations are underway for the Artemis II flyby of the moon. But before we get to the pointy end of the mission, what else are the astronauts doing in the name of science?
And what do lasers have to do with it? I'm ABC science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast following the Artemis II mission to the moon.
For Science Friction on ABC Radio National.
And looking out window 3, you can see a beautiful crescent Earth with the sunlight glinting off of the ocean and the swirling clouds. It's just a truly remarkable sight. We are ready to talk.
Okay, Jacinta, you know what time it is. It's time for Mission Under a Minute. Go.
Favourite segment. Okay, the astronauts have been studying moon geography ahead of the flyby. They've also managed to do some manual piloting. So Victor Glover finally got some hours in. There was a very, very large selfie stick that took a photo of Orion. And they've also been taking photos of celestial bodies from Orion's windows and just getting really used to being in a tiny capsule with three of your mates.
In each other's armpits.
We are just people trying to get by. And for example, we might go look at the far side of the moon and take in its awesomeness and then go, maybe I should change my socks. This is the dichotomy of human spaceflight.
And in the latest toilet update, they also had to move the spaceship to defrost the pee valve so they could dump some waste.
Okay, copy. Just give us a call before you start that flush. We'll listen out.
All right, so they've been busy enough. There's also a whole lot of science going on in the Orion capsule too. Can you walk me through a few of the experiments that are running?
Yeah, I really love that whenever there's an astronaut, there's always science going on. They never can just sit still.
Well, they've got about 15 master's degrees between them, so.
That's so true. Yeah, they've got to make good use of them. So one of the things about this particular mission is there hasn't been that many trips to the moon at all, and especially not with the kind of instrumentation that we have today. So while there's scientific experiments happening, the vast majority of the scientific experiments are actually just like on the astronauts themselves. They're trying to see how they deal with stuff in space. For example, one of them's called the Archer experiment. It's the Artemis Research for Crew Health and Readiness. And this is basically, they have a smartwatch, it does fitness tracking and all that kind of stuff, and it tracks their activity, sleep patterns, well-being, and interactions throughout the 10 days. So the second one is Avatar. That's a virtual astronaut tissue analog response. How good are the names for these?
I feel like they come up with the names and then make the acronym. It's a backronym, surely.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so this one is an organ on a chip device. And this is to study the effect of radiation and microgravity. Specifically, they've actually got the Artemis II astronauts to give them cells, and they're going to be on this little chip to see how they go with the radiation.
They're also taking samples throughout the mission as well as before the launch and then after they splash down. So I did hear a little bit of chatter about some saliva samples being taken yesterday, and this is to look for changes in the immune system. And the way they take these saliva samples is they've got this little book, and they just kind of like lick a page at a time. Special paper. It's not just any old notebook, by the way. But it's needed because Orion doesn't have a fridge that you can chuck your saliva samples in. So
I didn't know it was a book. That's really cool.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, imagine getting handed that book at the end and being like, oh, great, thanks.
It's like a urine sample, but worse. You're just like handing it. Like, oh, gross. Like
bits of food and stuff stuck on there as well. But the information they can glean from this is to do with the immune system, and that's a big thing in space. Astronauts get sick in space, and when they do, it could potentially be really bad.
We know lots of information about this because there's been lots of research about this on the ISS. One of the things that we haven't done a lot of research on, though, is looking at radiation exposure outside of Earth's little protective bubble. So on the ISS, they're still within that bubble there, whereas Artemis is not. Artemis is definitely, it's gone really far out. And at the moment, actually, there's a solar storm going on. And so the astronauts are probably getting more radiation than usual. There was lots of sensors and other data collected on Artemis 1 to make sure that they would be okay for this kind of mission. But yeah, there's plenty of reason to suggest that this is something that they'll get information on for the first time in 50 years.
What's the bubble that protects us on the ground from cosmic radiation?
Yeah, so the bubble, we think of it like a bubble, but it's not really. It's the magnetosphere. So it's Earth's magnetic field, and it kind of covers the Earth in this particular way, and it gets less and less protective the further out you go. So in this case, the astronauts are quite far away, and so they're just going to get more radiation in what's known as solar flares. So the sun has a lot of temper tantrums, but mostly we're protected. The astronauts, let's hope that little Orion capsule can do the job.
And now the astronauts are getting pretty close to the moon, and they're going to be doing some science as they fly past the moon as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what they're going to be doing?
We have had quite a few probes going around the moon.
Sure.
Everybody kind of understands that we've seen the moon from all of these different angles, but we haven't seen it with human eyes. And so some of the things they're looking at are locations that have never been seen by human eyes before. I think there's an argument to be made for whether it's actually better to see it with human eyes or whether it's better to see it with a probe and then look at it up close. But saying that, this is the first time we're doing this for 50 years, and I think it's still extremely cool that these astronauts are going to be looking at a part of the moon that people haven't laid eyes on.
Well, last night we did have our first view of the moon far side, and it was just absolutely spectacular. I think that one of the interesting things that happens when you look at a moon that inherently just looks different is like the darker parts just aren't quite in the right place, and something about you senses that is not the moon that I'm used to seeing. And sure enough, we got out our lunar targeting information and we matched up and we're like, that is the dark side. That is something we have never seen before.
NASA science officer Kelsey Young spoke in more detail about the science that will be happening.
Oh, I'm so glad somebody asked me about science objectives. The reason there are parts of the far side that have never before been seen by human eyes are that when Apollo missions launched, they prioritized launching into windows where the near side was illuminated, because that's, of course, where the Apollo missions landed. And so for when Apollo astronauts were orbiting the moon, the far side, they of course orbited over the far side, but it was not illuminated at the time when they were in orbit. Also, they flew much closer to the moon than Artemis Two will fly, and therefore the horizon views of their spacecraft did not permit them to see the poles. And so we have a really unique vantage point with the Artemis II mission, where the crew will actually be able to see the whole lunar disk. This means that they'll be able to see the poles, and they'll also be able to provide scientific context for their observations. Some of the really neat things about lunar surface processes, especially impact cratering, is they can toss material hundreds, if not thousands, of kilometers across the surface. And because of this unique vantage point that Artemis II has, which is so much farther away than we experience with Apollo, they'll actually be able to provide context for those processes that are so influential across the entire lunar surface, where one crater in the northern hemisphere can shed material all the way down into the southern hemisphere. We're looking forward to the unique views.
There's experiments happening on Earth as well that are related to the mission, and there's a local angle here. What's happening in Oz?
So in Friday's episode, I mentioned the laser system, which is using to download 4K videos. Do you remember?
Oh, I absorb all information about streaming. So yes, I remember.
Of course. Okay, so Australia is part of that as well. The Quantum Optical Ground Station at the Australian National University is testing a new type of receiver, very similar to the one that NASA uses and they are using in this particular mission. But the ANU version is hopefully cheaper and an off-the-shelf version. So it'll be able to be put in different locations around the world if it is successful. And currently, as far as we know, it hasn't been used yet, but it is ready to be used. NASA just has to say when.
Great. All right, NASA, you hear that? We want to test this ANU receiver ASAP.
We'll go on location. We'll do it. We'll do the episode from ANU.
Now, we've had an email from Jacob, and he was wondering if one of the main reasons we're going back to the moon is to mine helium-3. He says it's supposed to be the ideal fuel for fusion power, which we theoretically need since it seems like the world is still hooked on fossil fuels. Jacinta, what do you reckon? Helium-3?
Yes and no. This is all still very up in the air. There are some groups that are trying to get this stuff off the ground, but I would say that it's still in its extremely early stages. So here on Earth, there isn't enough helium-3 to support its use for power generation, and there are estimates that there is quite a bit of it on the moon, 1 million tons of the stuff. However, that's a ballpark figure from a lunar samples brought back to Earth from the Apollo mission. So we're talking decades and decades ago. So the other thing that's worth noting here, though, is that helium fusion isn't a technology that's ready to go yet. It's just not at the stage where we'd be able to do anything with it. So the idea of mining a material for a power generation source that we haven't really got off the ground yet, but it's something that companies like, you know, NASA, ESA, and other companies have invested money in, and they are looking at this as something that they might want to do in the future.
So we'll catch you all tomorrow, where we'll be entering the lunar sphere of influence.
Ooh.
And if you have any questions, email sciencefriction@abc.net.au.
I feel like we're doing the best we can, and I feel like we're doing pretty well.
This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Traynor. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bowler. See you on Monday.